everyone. I am Juan Schmitz, and Richard H. Grant couldn't be here to observe today, but he sends his best. So this research was all on the spread of soybean rust, which has been carefully tracked now for 3 years. It's done both by on-the-ground field observations, such as those monitored, those extensive scouting done by the USDA APHIS, and forecast models. One of the most popular is the Integrated Aerobiological Modeling System. These models predict both the viability and the transport of the spores to determine the potential for deposition and subsequent infection. These models use, in their atmospheric transport schemes, certain equations that define the extinction of spores due to total shortwave irradiance. It's known that ultraviolet light in the B wavelength and lesser in the A wavelength are major causes of spore deactivation during transport, but both models use broadband shortwave irradiance instead. You can see in the graph here that this is the entire shortwave irradiance scheme, and the UVB wavelength is just to the left of the red bar here. So the purpose of this research was to incorporate a model of spore extinction into a spore trajectory model using the hybrid single-particle Lagrangian integrated trajectory model, fortunately known by its simpler nickname, HiSplit, and to determine the influence of UVB rather than total solar radiation. We also want to calculate this exposure under variable cloud cover conditions and do this for an actual event, the 3rd through the 6th of September, for a infection event in Dallas County, Iowa. The existing models are formulated here. One is an exponential model that uses total solar radiation to a flat surface with a critical dose that is known to effectively inactivate 63.2% of those spores in transit. Izard has presented a linear model for spore viable spore fraction. It's currently used in IOMS and the Soybean Rust Aerobiological Prediction System, and it also uses total solar radiance to a flat surface. Current unpublished work with myself, Dr. Grant, the Harmons in Florida, and Wayne Jurek proposes that when studying solely UVB radiation, there is a power function that more accurately predicts the extinction due to UV light, and this is presented here. It has an R-squared of 0.84 compared to 0.82 and 0.77 for the other two models. So it is possible to create a model that incorporates this effect of UVB radiation. It needs to include that irradiance, a cloud fraction, and the total stratospheric ozone column. The lack of large-scale UV monitoring sites requires a lot of additional computational work, however. So we need to assume for this model that the spore is below the cloud. This is an accurate assumption. For this case study, we looked at the heights and they were all below typical lifting condensation levels. Also, due to temperature and relative humidity considerations with spore transit, spores can't withstand the temperature and relative humidity constraints above the cloud, must be within or below. We need a surface albedo in the UV of 0.05, which is a typical value used by both Grant and Gordon Heisler. And we need a probability of the cloud obscuring the sun, which is based on the cloud fraction that we get from this 3-hour, 40-kilometer resolution meteorological data. So here's the case study. We've got known infection in Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, the south, and it is long-term transport all the way up into Dallas County, Iowa, which is just west of Des Moines. So once we get this cloud fraction from our meteorological data, we fit this into a equation to calculate the UVB flux, and that is also equal to the UV present at the spore level over the UV present above this ozone column in the stratosphere. Then we take this total downwelling UVB radiation for a clear sky above the ozone level, and we plug it into the National Centers for Atmospheric Research Atmospheric Chemistry Division Quick Total Ultraviolet Calculator. This is a website that takes the surface albedo, the stratospheric ozone column, which is available from the ozone monitoring instrument provided by NASA at the Goddard Space Flight Center. we multiply the UVB flux by the clear sky UV and achieve a total downwelling 305 nanometer radiation at the spore level. This is a flat surface UV radiation, so our next step is to calculate out the diffuse and the direct fractions of UV radiation to make this into a three-dimensional model. We do that here using the cloud fraction and the solar zenith angle, cloud represented by C, solar zenith by the theta there, and a bunch of empirically derived constants. We take the diffuse fraction times the spore level UV to get the diffuse irradiance and also the direct irradiance, and then we plug it into a model that essentially gives us our three-dimensional UV at 305 nanometer irradiance on the spore. You can see that depicted in this grid here. You've got some direct irradiance coming from the sun. You've got some direct irradiance that is being diffused by aerosols in the atmosphere, by the ground, and also by clouds. This is the spore extinction equation, the power function that we use. And we plug it into our case study. In this case, on the 3rd of September, we've got some cloud cover over the south. We've got some northward movement of air, as depicted by this high split output here. And we've got, based on the USDA APHIS site, known areas of infection depicted in red, which give us our possible spore source locations represented by the stars on that graph. Then we compare the results. We've got start latitude and longitude, ending latitude and longitude, and the viable spore fractions present at the end of its ride through the atmosphere. You can see here that the spore fractions by Izard and Ehler have to some degree similar results. The difference is based on the fact that the linear model wants to predict at which point the viable spore fraction is zero. Ehler's model prefers to ride things out and allow for some fraction to continue to be viable at very high amounts of radiation. The UV fraction is high, and we can see here that since the spores still haven't yet made it through Missouri, we can say for this day it's unlikely for Iowa spore transit, considering viable spore fractions are all below 50% at this point. 4th of September, we've got more substantial cloud cover. We also have some spores that are going through Iowa. We've got one in North Oklahoma, represented here, and we've got a couple from Arkansas that are coming in the vicinity of Dallas County. So, to look at the spore fractions at the time at which they are closest to Dallas County, we have one, possibly two spores that have enough of a viable fraction to infect at that location, and we have represented at the bottom here the Oklahoma spore, which is unlikely to infect. Therefore, we can say that possibly East Central or Northwest Arkansas spores were the ones to infect in Iowa. On the next day, we've got even more substantial cloud cover, in this case going up into Iowa, and we can see a lot of spores are making it towards Dallas County. We've got one coming from Texas, we've got four coming from Arkansas. And the spore fractions here for the linear model, the exponential model, and the power function all line up fairly well. So based on the highest probability of viable spores, we can say that the likely location is here in northeast Arkansas. On the 6th of September, we've got less cloud cover in the south. It's more up here in Iowa, Missouri. And as soon as those spores are hitting Missouri, they're coming into the easterlies and being blown nowhere near Iowa. So we can sum up by saying the model appears to influence what regions may be sources for transported spores. The incorporation of the UV irradiance into plant disease prediction schematics is a beneficial alternative to incorporation of broadband solar irradiance, because the UVB irradiance does use such different parameters and relies on different sources and albedos and everything for the calculation of actual spore incident radiation and the incorporation of an extinction curve for this irradiance rather than the total solar irradiance may prove beneficial. I'd like to thank the USDA UVB Monitoring and Research Program from Colorado State and Fort Collins, as well as Purdue Agronomy, for the funding to get me here. And these are my references. Any questions? Well, if the spores can't make it to a certain location, then they probably won't infect. To this point, because most of the northern infections have occurred so late in season, it doesn't affect management practice as much. But if we get some overwintering in Louisiana or more northward locations that might head up the Mississippi sooner, then knowing whether these spores are still alive when they hit certain locations might affect management.